infrastructure is managed should be a key responsibility for us on this subcommittee. So I look forward to getting a report card from today's witnesses on ICANN, accountability and transparency throughout the process, and to learn more about what ICANN is doing to ensure competition and the integrity and stability of the internet. And the ranking member of the full committee is recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I thank you. Mr. Chairman, I want to congratulate you on the accession to the responsibility of chairman of this subcommittee. I look forward to working with you on these matters. I also want to commend you for today's hearings. We are engaged in inquiring into a matter which a lot of people regard as being arcane, but that does not mean that it is irrelevant. To the contrary, the integrity of the process used by ICANN recently when it selected a handful of new top domain names is arguably one of the most critical issues affecting internet today. Domain names are the key to internet commerce, and we must determine whether ICANN has a process which is fair and proper, and whether the outcome will lead to a more effective competition in the management of the global domain name system. We must also inquire as to whether the process has resulted in achieving a measure of public confidence by its fairness, or by grotesque unfairness has achieved not just distrust, but active distaste. The questions, important as they are only going to address, however, narrow issues pertaining to domain name assignments. The larger question we must ask is whether this administrative process is emblematic of a larger problem with the overall system of internet governance. This system set up by ICANN was initiated by the U.S. Department of Commerce and continues to be the subject of the authority of that agency. As such, it falls squarely within this committee's oversight responsibilities, and I hope and expect that we will be holding hearings to evaluate whether the mission of that agency is being soundly defined, properly executed, and whether, in fact, it is being fair. The signs I would observe are that it has not been behaving fairly, and that its behavior has left a lot of unanswered questions. I hope that we will hear from witnesses today who will be able to describe what is going on there. I gather many of them believe the system is broken. I have strong evidence to believe that they're correct. Some suggest that ICANN has morphed into a non-governmental technical standard setting organization to a full-fledged policy making body. If that's true, there is cause for serious concern. ICANN was not given authority to assume that function, and it appears to be accountable to no one, except perhaps God Almighty, for its actions. Most important, if ICANN is making internet policy decisions, then the people must know that they who are affected will have access to reliable and transparent systems to seek redress for harm. There's no question we are treading on uncharted territory. Bumps in the road are, of course, unavoidable. But while it may be desirable to keep internet unregulated, both from a diplomatic and economic standpoint, we must not allow U.S. interests to be put at risk by blindly adhering to a hands-off approach. And we must see to it that the agency which we are constituting to act on behalf of the U.S. government in these matters functions fairly, well, efficiently, and in a fashion which is going to be in the broad overall public interest. And I particularly commend you, therefore, for initiating this hearing. I believe that our oversight efforts have to be extremely diligent, and we have to be prepared to act quickly should it become necessary to do so. I would observe that we should follow this set of hearings vigorously and energetically to require the necessary answers from ICANN and from the Department of Commerce. I believe there is much to be justified here, and I believe that the task of justifying these things is going to be difficult. And I look forward to assisting those agencies that are responsible here in achieving a correct and a proper result. It may be painful for them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Dingell. I would make a motion at this point that all members, the House is not in session with recorded votes today, so a number of members I know have gone back to their districts. But I would make a motion by unanimous consent that all members of the subcommittee have an opportunity to put their, insert their full statement into the record. And with that, I recognize Mr. Shimkus from Illinois.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have an opening statement.
Mr. Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brief opening statement. I'm pleased to join the telecommunications subcommittee with you, Mr. Chairman, with Ranking Member Markey, and look forward to working with both of you on issues that are so important to the new economy. The subject of domain names is of interest to all of us. Recently, I met with the Vice President of Cuyahoga Community College in Cleveland, who expressed his frustration with his school's internet domain. Cuyahoga County Community College in Cleveland, otherwise known as Tri-C, is the first and largest community college in Ohio. It's the fourth largest institution of higher ed in the state. Despite the fact that Tri-C is a large, well-established higher education institution, it's been locked out of obtaining the domain .edu. Only four-year degree-granting colleges and universities generally are allowed the .edu domain. Two-year colleges are not allowed that address, even though they educate as many, if not more, students than many four-year institutions. Tri-C's website address is www.tri-c.c.oh.us, a not especially memorable address for its students and faculty and others. The Department of Commerce, in partnership with ICANN, oversees the .edu domain. While they have expressed interest in finding a solution, action has not been taken in an expedient manner. It's important for the department and for ICANN to move expeditiously so community colleges and their students can have easier access and equal access to important campus resources and the internet. Mr. Chairman, I thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Davis.
I ask unanimous consent my statement go on the record in deference to our witnesses so we can hear from them.
Mr. Gordon. Thank you, Mr. Davis.
I'm ready to hear the panel.
Ms. Harmon.
As the rookie on this committee who represents what is now called the digital coast of California, I just want to say how happy I am to be here and to be on this subcommittee and to make one observation, which is I believe that we have, in general, a digital economy and an analog government. And the challenge is to create a digital economy to match a digital government to match the digital economy. We have to do this right, and we have to observe fairness. But it would be a shame if we imposed analog procedures on this issue. And so I hope that we will be very creative and very digital in this subcommittee as we move forward. I yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Ms. DeGette.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll echo my colleague from California's pleasure at being on this committee. You may not be aware, but just in the past few years, the Denver metropolitan area has become one of the fastest growing telecommunications hubs in the country, and as a matter of fact, is now in the top five. So even though it's onerous, I know, I would love to invite the chairman and the ranking member to come out there and see our industry at some point and to perhaps have some field hearings there. It's exciting what's going on, and I'm excited to be on the telecom committee. Even though I'm new to this committee, I'm not new to the issue. When I was in the state legislature in Colorado, we passed one of the landmark laws that preceded the 1996 Act. And so I'm delighted to get back with these issues and to hear from the witnesses today, and I'll yield back my time as well.
Thank you very much. Our witnesses today are Dr. Vinton Cerf, Chairman of the Board for the Internet Corporation, assigned names and numbers, ICANN. Mr. Lou Kerner, CEO of .TV. Ms. Elena Breitman, Director of the Policy and Public Affairs at Register.com. Mr. David Short, Legal Director of the International Air Transport Association. Mr. Ken Hansen, Director of Corporate Development of Newstar, Inc. Ms. Leah Galagos, President of Atlanta Route Network, Inc. Professor Michael Frumkin, Professor of Law, University of Miami School of Law. And Mr. Alan Davidson, Associate Director of the Center for Democracy and Technology. Welcome all of you to our first hearing of the year. We plan your statements are made part of the record in their entirety. We'd like to limit your presentation to no more than 5 minutes. We've got a relatively new timer here, which will tell you exactly how much time you've got left. And I'm going to be fairly fast with the gavel. Following that 5 minutes, members on the dais will be able to ask questions for 5 minutes, and we'll proceed that way. Dr. Cerf, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Ranking Member Markey, ladies and gentlemen of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to describe what I believe is an important accomplishment of what is a young and still maturing entity, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. The introduction of new competition for global domain names at the registry or wholesale level of the domain name system is happening for the first time in 15 years. This is the third and the last of the significant initial goals set forth in the U.S. government white paper that called for the creation of ICANN. ICANN has succeeded in opening the registrar or the retail portion of the domain name market to new competition, accrediting more than 180 competitive registrars, of which about half are now operating, and seeing average registrar prices drop by more than a factor of two in the first year of this competition. ICANN's Uniform Dispute Resolution Procedure has successfully provided a quick, cheap, and globally available way to resolve many domain name disputes. This last major initial goal, the introduction of new global top-level domains, is the most complex of these three efforts. The seven original global TLDs were created in 1985, and for at least most of the past decade, there has been considerable debate about whether adding new TLDs is a good idea. The range of opinion is from zero to millions, literally. And as a result, a number of past efforts have not reached a conclusion for lack of consensus. It has only been with the creation of ICANN and the use of the consensus development mechanisms it contains that we have finally been able to come to a sufficient consensus to allow us to move forward with new TLD additions to the domain name system. On the other hand, all the advice that we've received from the technical and the policy bodies of ICANN have told us to move prudently and carefully to minimize any risk of destabilizing the domain name system. Many of us believe that we can add new TLDs without creating instability or other adverse effects. But the fact is, it's never been done in the context of the Internet as it exists today. And thus, while our objective is to encourage new competition here, just as we already have in the registrar segment of the market, we want to do so without endangering the utility of what has become a critical global medium for communication and commerce. The consensus development process within ICANN has been extensive. This issue was first referred to ICANN's Domain Name Support Organization, an open advisory body that recommended the introduction of a limited number of new TLDs as a proof of concept, with additional TLDs to be added only if it was clear that it could be done without destabilizing or otherwise impairing the utility of the Internet. A similar recommendation was conveyed by ICANN's technical support organization. The board accepted these recommendations and asked for proposals for new TLDs to be included in this first limited proof of concept phase. Because ICANN is a consensus development body, everything about this process was transparent. All the proposals were posted on ICANN's website for public comment. Both the proposals and roughly 4,000 public comments were reviewed by ICANN staff and independent consultants retained for that specific purpose. The results of that evaluation, a 326-page analysis, were also posted for public comment, and another 1,000 comments were received. The board then held a public forum lasting 12 hours where the applicants and the general public provided final input, and then the next day selected a diverse group of seven proposals to carry out this initial proof of concept experiment in a public meeting that lasted about 6 hours. Since that time, negotiation of appropriate commercial agreements have been underway, and I hope we'll see those final agreements soon. Because, as was clear from the beginning of the process, ICANN was only going to select a limited number of proposals for this initial proof of concept phase, a significant fraction of the 44 applications that went through the process were inevitably going to be disappointed at not being selected in this first proof of concept round. And they were disappointed. But the real news here is that finally, with the formation of ICANN and the development of this consensus, this long debate is actually producing new GTLDs. If all those selected become operational, we will have immediately doubled the number of global TLDs available. This will immediately increase competition and consumer choice. I have a longer statement, Mr. Chairman.
I read it last night.
With attachments. Well, you're very kind to have done so, sir. I have longer statements with attachments, and I would ask that these be entered into the record. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have, and I thank you for allowing me and ICANN to participate in this important proceeding.
Great. Thank you very much. Mr. Kerner.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Luke Kerner.
You could just pull the, for everybody that's here, if you could just pull the mics a little closer, that'd be
sure.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Luke Kerner, CEO of the .TV Corporation. Thank you for the opportunity to appear today and to share our concerns about the process by which ICANN proposes to introduce a new set of top-level domain names to the Internet. .TV is the registry for web addresses ending in .TV. In 1999, we entered into a partnership with the sovereign nation of Tuvalu to commercialize its country code top-level domain .TV. And in just 9 months, we've registered over 250,000 domain names, establishing .TV as the fastest growing TLD in Internet history. We've invested millions of dollars to build a globally diverse technical infrastructure that is reliable, scalable, and secure. We come here as supporters of ICANN, but with serious concerns about its TLD selection process and its impact on the Internet community. The white paper, which led to the creation of ICANN in 1998, envisioned an organization which would operate under a, quote, sound and transparent decision-making process and be fair, open, and pro-competitive. Mr. Chairman, these worthy ideals were not evident in the TLD selection process implemented by ICANN, which could be described as unfair, closed, and anti-competitive. On August 15th of 2000, ICANN solicited applications to operate new TLDs. Applicants were required to submit in great detail their technical, financial, and business plans for the proposed TLD and to pay a non-refundable $50,000 fee. After paying the fee and spending hundreds of man hours preparing our applications, we were thrust into a selection process that was highly flawed. Our many concerns with the process are covered in greater detail in our written submission, but let me briefly outline three areas of glaring deficiencies for the committee. First, there was very vague selection criteria. ICANN's criteria for assessing proposals were vague at best and were not weighted in any manner to give applicants a clear idea of the relative importance of each of the criteria. For example, the criteria included the enhancement of competition for registration services. Our consortium thus proposed a registry fee of $3.50 a name, substantially lower than the average of the winning applicants, which was $9.68. And even the lowest fee among the winners of $5 is still almost 50% above our proposed registry fee. However, pricing never seemed to be addressed by ICANN in the selection process. Our second major area of concern is a lack of due diligence in the process. ICANN had intended that the evaluation process be, quote, that it will, quote, not involve only reviewing what has been submitted, but also consulting with technical, financial, business, and legal experts and gathering additional information that may be pertinent to the application. However, ICANN received 47 applications by its October 2nd filing deadline, which overwhelmed its resources. It became apparent that the six-week period allocated to the review process was completely unrealistic. ICANN fell behind its timetable, forcing it to abbreviate the review process. Most notably, ICANN abandoned plans to conduct interviews with applicants. Due process was sacrificed for expediency in order to meet ICANN's self-imposed deadline of November 16th. In response to criticism from applicants concerning the lack of opportunity to respond to the staff report, ICANN announced on November 14th that each applicant would be permitted to make a three-minute presentation to the board on the following day. As decisions by the board appear to have largely already been made, this was a disingenuous gesture. Thus, we used our time to express our dissatisfaction with the process, and our message met with thunderous applause from the ICANN community members in attendance. Our final major concern is that the board decisions were based upon factually inaccurate staff reports. After conducting little financial, technical, or operational due diligence, ICANN on November 10th released its staff report, which, though replete with errors about our proposal, profoundly influenced the decisions of the ICANN board. The report was posted just one day before the start of the ICANN meetings at which the new TLDs were selected, effectively eliminating the opportunity for public comment originally prescribed by ICANN. The report seriously misstated the technical capabilities of our consortium, which collectively offered a broad geographical reach, diverse internet and technological expertise, and the financial resources necessary. Our written response to the staff report posted on ICANN's website per ICANN protocol was not even read by the board. The erroneous findings of the staff report essentially eliminated our applications and many others from serious consideration by the board. Given the current situation, Congress must intervene to ensure a fair and equitable method for approving new TLDs. Mr. Chairman, the approval of new top-level domains is an important matter warranting congressional review, and the Department of Commerce should not implement ICANN's recommendation until such a review takes place. We are concerned that Commerce intends to simply rubber stamp ICANN's implementation request, which we believe is inappropriate given the fundamental flaws in the selection process. We're not advocating U.S. government control of the internet. However, while Commerce maintains oversight authority of ICANN, the U.S. government has a responsibility to ensure that decisions affecting the internet are reached fairly and that proper precedents are established. This is the first major test of ICANN's decision-making authority, and Congress has an important role to play in establishing and enforcing the standards by which ICANN will make future decisions. Through the urging of Congress, the Department of Commerce should direct ICANN to reconsider all top-level domain applications in a manner that is fair, open, and rational.
If Congress, Mr. Conner, I must beg that we've got to stay on our schedule. So I'll appreciate
the Chairman, in that case, I'll stop there. Thank you.
And I appreciated receiving your statement as well that I was also able to read last night.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Brightman.
Mr. Chairman, Congressman Markey, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me to appear before you today. I commend the committee for holding this hearing, as your role is important to continuing the stable and innovative growth of the internet. I am here representing Registry.com, an equity partner in Registry Pro, which, as you know, is one of the new registries selected by ICANN. I'm here to provide the perspective of a company that was awarded a new TLD. Building on the restricted model of .gov, .edu, and .mil, Registry Pro proposed a .pro TLD to focus on professionals. I can also offer the perspective of a registrar, as we believe consumers will benefit significantly from new TLDs. To fully answer the question, please allow me to briefly review the growth of this market. As the committee knows, from 1993 to as recently as 2 years ago, a single company was both the only registry and the sole registrar for ComNet and Org. To introduce competition, ICANN has taken two major steps. 2 years ago, ICANN launched a testbed of five registrars, and although NSI remained the sole registry, there are over 140 accredited registrars. With competition, the domain name market has grown dramatically from 8 million in 1999 to about 29 million ComNet and Org names today. ICANN took its second step with these new TLDs, and the market is projected to grow to over 140 million in 4 years. The growth is key not only for registrars, but also other internet-related businesses. This committee has endorsed competition in the sector, knowing that it would deliver value to consumers, and it's been proven right. Competition among registrars has improved technology, customer support, introduced price competition, and fostered innovative new products. Competition among registries will similarly deliver value. First, there'll be improved services. Second, consumers can register for the web address of their choice. They'll also be able to distinguish their website depending on the TLD they choose. Conversely, delay only serves to protect the sole global registry and deny consumer choice. While registry competition will not exist until these new TLDs are actually operational, this will take months of preparation and significant resources. Substantial technological facilities must be built, engineering protocols and applications written and tested, and highly skilled personnel located and retained. Competition is also critical to future innovation. New technology is on its way, but if new registries are not introduced rapidly, there will be only one registry in a position to shape and operate the new technologies. As for the process, we believe it achieved the fundamental goal of introducing successful new TLDs while protecting the stability of the internet. On August 15th, ICANN posted eight specific criteria relating to stability, proof of concept, competition, utility of the domain name system, meeting unmet needs, diversity, policy, and protecting the rights of others. Registry Pro worked hard to meet these requirements. We prepared a detailed description of state-of-the-art innovative technology that would enhance the usefulness and dependability of the .pro websites. We proposed an innovative TLD that would add diversity and address the needs of consumers and professionals. We reached out to professional associations and credentialing bodies to work out a good trusted verification mechanism and are establishing an advisory board to continue doing so. We also outlined a set of policies to address the needs of the various domain name system constituencies and guaranteed a level playing field for all accredited registrars. We've invested hundreds of thousands in research, analysis, and preparation of a thorough proposal, and the build-out and operation of a secure registry requires a commitment of millions more. We believe that our application, like others, received substantial scrutiny by the independent panels of experts, by ICANN staff, by the public during several public comment periods, and ultimately significant independent deliberation by the ICANN board. There was an opportunity in this process for applicants to clarify their documents on the public record. While no process is perfect, we believe a genuine effort was made by ICANN to provide notice, transparency, and fairness. ICANN accomplished the ultimate goal of launching new global TLDs while minimizing risk. The variety of these TLDs paves the way for future development. As the chairman has noted in the last hearing on this subject, ICANN is responsible for introducing competition. We hope that the committee's conclusion today is an endorsement of an expeditious launch of these new TLDs so that consumers can benefit from the resulting innovation and the availability of new domain names. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it has been my pleasure to testify today. I appreciate the opportunity.
And you yield back the balance of your time. That's terrific. Mr. Short, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and subcommittee members. My name is David Short, and I'm the legal director for the International Air Transport Association, IATA, based in Geneva, Switzerland. IATA appreciates this opportunity to appear today to share with the committee its experience in applying to ICANN to sponsor .travel as a new internet TLD. Copies of IATA's written comments have been previously provided to the committee staff, and before proceeding, may I ask that they be incorporated into the record of this hearing?
Absolutely. Thank you.
First, let me say a word or two about my organization, IATA. IATA lies at the very heart of the world's largest industry, travel and tourism. Our members consist of 275 airlines, which transport over 95% of the world's scheduled international air traffic. Travel is one of the largest segments of e-commerce today. There are really only two things holding travel back from realizing its full potential in the new economy. The first is the fact that in the .com environment, there are no quality standards applied to domain name registrants. It's the first party to show up with $35 to claim a name not already taken by someone else who gets it, without having to satisfy any integrity, consumer protection, or quality assurance standards. And so, while many consumers may research travel on the web, they are understandably reluctant to actually book and pay for transactions on .com websites they have no reason or basis to trust in. And this makes it all the harder for new websites to compete with the existing dominant sites like Expedia and Travelocity. The second constraint is the depletion of commercially attractive .com names. As the committee is well aware, all the simple and obvious names and virtually all of the common English language words are already registered as .com domain names, thus erecting potentially insurmountable barriers to new entry and new competition. And so, when ICANN announced it would entertain applications for new TLDs, IATA conceived of .travel as a dedicated TLD for the entire travel industry where quality criteria would be applied, such that consumers would have a basis to trust in and more readily do business with .travel websites. The IATA application drew support on the record from individual commenters and associations representing over 1 million travel industry businesses around the world. Our application and supplemental filings with ICANN demonstrated that we fully satisfied all of the 9 criteria that ICANN had announced would apply to the new TLD applications. and ICANN never disagreed with that. What happened was the ICANN staff evaluation of our application decided to apply a new 10th criterion, which they called representativeness. And they erroneously concluded the IATA application did not reflect sufficient representativeness of the travel industry and threw it out based solely on that factor, without regard to all of its undisputed positive attributes or the widespread support it had attracted. Obviously, it was fundamentally unfair to judge our application according to something we had no notice we even needed to address. But even more troubling is the fact that when looked at objectively, our application is in fact one of the most representative of all of the applications, as evidenced by the broad support it attracted on the record. The ICANN staff conclusion was based solely on the fact that a relatively small number of comments had been filed on the comment forum by a group of travel agents who have a record of opposing virtually everything proposed by the airline industry. Not because it's a bad idea, but simply because they have an axe to grind against the airlines. No effort was made by the ICANN staff to assess the veracity of the statements made in these comments, nor to recognize that they were in fact prompted by ulterior motives rather than any valid objection to the .travel TLD. Moreover, IATA seeks only the opportunity to offer .travel as a new competitive alternative. Any of these dissenting commenters, or anyone else for that matter, who wants to stay in the .com world remains free to do so. So there is absolutely no reason to allow a tiny minority of travel agents to veto an innovative proposal to introduce a new competitive alternative so desperately sought and supported by the great majority of our industry. In summary, all IATA asks is that our application be given the fair shake we clearly were denied in November. One way to do so would be for ICANN to grant our pending request that our application be reconsidered. Another would be for the Commerce Department to exercise its responsibility to select the new TLDs in accordance with APA requirements. I see that my time has expired. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Hansen.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ken Hansen, and I'm the Director of Corporate Development for NuStar. NuStar is a neutral third-party provider of clearinghouse and database administration services. NuStar serves as a number plan administrator and a local number portability administrator for North America. Our joint venture with Melbourne IT, a Melbourne, Australia-based provider of domain name services, was recently selected by the Internet Corporation for Sign Names and Numbers to operate the registry for the top-level domain .biz. During the application process, the joint venture was referred to as JV Team and is now known as New Level. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before the subcommittee to discuss the ICANN selection process. NuStar has been following the potential introduction of new TLDs and attending ICANN meetings for over 2 years prior to the issuance of the August 2000 RFP. New Level was selected to operate the .biz registry. As such, New Level was one of seven selected to operate registries for the new top-level domains. The criteria and objectives utilized in the selection process represented the culmination of many years of well-publicized industry debate and consensus concerning the introduction of new top-level domains, and not solely as a result of the most recent ICANN application process. Having been directly involved in over 100 requests for proposal processes during my 15 years in the communications industry, I can say with confidence that the manner in which ICANN conducted the application process far exceeds measures taken by private companies in conducting procurement activities for services of similar complexity. The process utilized by ICANN was conducted in an open and transparent manner. I would like to direct your attention to the attached exhibit, which contrasts these differences. The open process described in the exhibit represents a process in which all competitors had equal access to information, had an equal opportunity to prepare their responses, and compete with the other applicants. We believe that the TLDs selected are a direct reflection of the evaluation criteria identified by ICANN and communicated to all applicants and the public in advance of the on the ICANN website. The criteria is as follows: to maintain the stability of the internet, the number one priority. Demonstrate an effective proof of concept concerning the introduction of new top-level domains, enhance competition for registry services, and enhance utility of the DNS. Meet currently unmet needs, enhance diversity of the internet, evaluate the delegation of policy formulation functions for special purpose TLDs, ensure the appropriate protections of the rights of others, and require completeness of proposals. I can't state it clearly that its intent was to select a limited number of new TLDs initially and to proceed carefully in order to ensure the stability of the internet was maintained. In the new TLD application process overview, which was posted to the ICANN website, ICANN stated that it is anticipated that only a few of the applications that are received will be selected for further negotiations towards suitable contracts with ICANN. This statement was consistent with the resolution of the ICANN board on new TLDs in which the board, I quote, adopted the Names Council recommendation that policy be established for the introduction of new TLDs in a measured and responsible manner. The selected TLDs are also consistent with ICANN's desire to create diversity. Specifically, ICANN stated that the diversity the proposal would bring to the program would be considered in selecting new TLDs. In addition, the criteria for assessing new TLDs included the following criteria: the feasibility and utility of the different types of TLDs, the effectiveness of different procedures for launching TLDs, and a number of others. Although the qualified TLDs were not selected, ICANN made it clear that additional TLDs were likely to be introduced in the future. The ICANN process described above will create effective competition where none exists. Competition will create new choices for individuals, for organizations, and businesses in terms of name availability, pricing, and functionality. The ICANN evaluation criteria and objectives in introducing new TLDs were the result of an open public debate and widespread internet community consensus. The market participants created the ICANN process. And the ICANN process resulted in TLD and registry operator selections that are consistent with those criteria and the objectives stated in the introduction of the selected TLDs to proceed. While it is in the interest of the internet community as a whole for the introduction of the selected TLDs to proceed while other applications pursue appeals to the ICANN request for consideration process. I thank the subcommittee for giving me this opportunity to testify. I will answer any questions you have at this time.
Thank you. Ms. Gallegos.
It is still morning, so good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to be here and present our reasons for believing that ICANN's process for selecting new TLDs to enter into the USG route is detrimental to our survival and to the continued survival of the TLDs outside the auspices of ICANN. I am the president of ARNI, Atlantic Route Network, Inc., and I'm the manager of the .biz TLD. This top-level domain resolves in several of the inclusive namespace routes, which many people refer to as alternative or alternate routes. The inclusive namespace routes are route server systems that operate in the same manner, but independently of the Department of Commerce route system. The title of this hearing indicates your desire to ensure fair competition. My question is, how can this be accomplished with ICANN's usurping of the .biz TLD from ARNI, thus stealing its product? Under ICANN's policy, a competitor can pay a $50,000 fee to have ICANN usurp our business or any other at their whim. Talk about protecting the rights of others, that rather negates that. ARNI is a small company. Our entire business at this time is based upon domain name registrations in our TLD. With the announcement by ICANN that .biz was to be handed over to JV Team, now New Level, email began pouring in asking if we were going to be closed by ICANN or if ICANN were going to take our TLD. Why didn't we apply? For a small company, $50,000 is a high price to pay as a non-refundable fee that could be much better spent on development and infrastructure as opposed to a lottery, which we considered this to be. Why should we have to apply to keep a business that is already ours? It was well known that the board considers our registrants to be illegitimate and registrations to be pre-registrations, even though they are live, many with published commercial websites, and we are real, we are a business. There was no need to go through the ICANN process to prove what has already been proven, that our registries are open to the public, they work, that the roots do recognize them, have also proven themselves for well over 5 years. Stability of the internet, there is no reason on earth to consider that it would hurt stability when they have added so many TLDs over the past 10 years, and the roots themselves that I'm talking about have been stable for many, many years, and they're very robust. So stability is really not a technical issue at all. The .biz TLD was created in 1995, it first resolved in eDNS and later the ORSC and now the Pacific Roots. We are recognized in all the major roots except, of course, the USG root. We redelegated the management of .biz in 2000 and reopened the registry to the public for registration in the spring. We were able to provide registrations manually until the launch of our automated web-based system, which had been in beta. And by the way, there has been over $250,000 spent in the ramp-up for our .biz. We have a good chance of losing all of that. The moment the applications to ICANN were lodged, we emailed every applicant for our string and notified them, using the contact listed on the ICANN website, that .biz already existed and asked why they would choose an existing TLD. We also posted numerous comments on the ICANN board, as that was the only type of communication they would receive, and we received no responses. We were ignored by all recipients. We are now faced with a substantial loss due to ICANN's refusal to recognize that we are real, that we exist. It is baffling because they obviously recognize that ImageOnlineDesigns.web exists and decided not to award that string to Afilias as a result. Vince Cerf, who is here, stated his discomfort and reaffirmed later, and I have a quote in the written submission testimony, saying that he was uncomfortable with giving the .web string to another entity since IOD already had a functioning registry and they had existed with that registry for 5 years. Later, Mr. Krajan brings out burst was seemed to be typical attitude of the board, saying that knowing all of that, they still supported giving that string to another entity. It is important to note that while ICANN insists that it has its namespace and we all have ours, that the DNS is truly only one namespace and that we all must work within that namespace. If ICANN is successful in duplicating a TLD string in its root, there will be duplicate domain names, thousands of them. No one will know which domain they will see when keying an address into a browser because more and more ISPs are choosing to point to the so-called alternative routes, and hundreds of thousands of users will be affected. Consider what would happen if AT&T summarily took New York's 212 number space away and gave it to Verizon. That would be considered an anti-competitive act, putting Verizon out of business. Certainly, no one would consider suggesting that AT&T and Verizon issue mirror 212 numbers to different customers. The phone system wouldn't work. It would be just as foolish to suggest that ICANN and Atlantic Root issue mirror.biz names to different customers. There's no reason why there cannot be new TLDs added to the roots, all of them, but there is ample reason not to duplicate existing ones. It is not a function of the government to deliberately destroy existing businesses, nor is it a function of ICANN to facilitate that destruction. It is also not a function of ICANN to determine what business model should be allowed to exist or to compete, any more than any other root decides policies of TLD managers or indeed other roots. The market will decide which will succeed and which will fail.
That's a good point to conclude.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Professor Frumkin.
Mr. Chairman and members of the subcommittee, my name is Michael Frumkin. I'd like to thank the subcommittee very much for inviting me to appear here today. I'm a law professor at the University of Miami specializing in the law of the Internet. I've published more than 20 papers on the subject of Internet and related topics. 5 points. Number one, the shortage of gTLDs today is entirely artificial and easily curable. Experts, including Dr. Cerf, as far as I know, agree there is no technical obstacle to the creation of at least thousands and possibly tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of new TLDs. The only issue is rolling them out in some sequence where you don't do them all the same day. Removing this shortage would have competitive benefits in each of the three markets I identified in my prepared statement, the registry, registrar, and market for domain names. The spillover effects would benefit e-commerce and thus the entire economy. Now, why do we have this shortage now? We have it because the people with the power to fix it, the Department of Commerce, has simply chosen not to do so. Instead, they've delegated the question to ICANN, which they say is a private body, and they say is a standards body. I'm going to explain that it is not. ICANN says it's a standards body, but in this case, it's not acting as one, nor as a technical coordination body. It justifies its very tentative approach by saying it's a proof of concept, But it hasn't told us what the concept is it's trying to prove. It hasn't told us when the test is going to be evaluated or how we tell if it's a success. The concept can't be GTLD creation itself because we know there's no rocket science, the mechanics of that. You just type a few lines into a computer across the river here in Virginia, and it just takes a few minutes, and then it propagates naturally through the design of the Internet. Now, just how arbitrary ICANN was in this past process can be illustrated by two simple stories. One is it rejected the .union proposal based on unfounded last-minute speculation that maybe the international labor organizations that were part of the union movement somehow aren't democratic enough. It also rejected something called .iii because somebody on the board thought it was hard to pronounce. But that had never been a criterion ever mentioned before that very last minute. Now, why is ICANN acting in this arbitrary fashion? Why did it put this low limit on there? Why did it rush? I think the reason is, and despite its very nice rhetoric and the very welcome presence of genuine internet visionaries such as Dr. Cerf, that ICANN isn't a standards body. It isn't coordinating anything. It doesn't act by consensus of all the affected parties, just of the parties who get to have a seat at ICANN's table. It doesn't listen much to the public or end users. It welcomes their comments and then ignores them. In fact, what happened is ICANN skipped one of the goals in the white paper. In July 1999, then ICANN chair Esther Dyson came before this committee, subcommittee on oversight and investigation, and assured that ICANN's highest priority was to elect 9 at-large board members, exactly as ICANN had committed to do to the Department of Commerce when it was set up. They didn't do it. They reneged. Instead, they decided they'd only have 5 elected, and then they decided they'd have another study and take those 5 away and maybe zero base it, think it all over again, and who knows. Meanwhile, they amended their timetable to rush the selection in UGTLDs so all the decisions would be made before even those 5 elected people got to be at the table. The subsidiary organizations like the Names Council and the name supporting organizations have charters right now that exclude the participation of individuals. As an individual, you can't be a member of any of those things. It's not surprising, therefore, that when ICANN defines its consensus, it gets a view of only a narrow part of the Internet. In my prepared statement, I've explained in some detail why it is that commerce is going to have to act in conformity with the APA and the Constitution. You can say ICANN's private, then there's a non-delegation problem. You can say it's public, and then the APA ought to apply. I'm not going to repeat that here. I know your long-suffering staff has actually read that in detail, and I'm real impressed with them. Let me talk about what ICANN ought to do and what maybe you might do to help them. It seems to me the right thing for ICANN to do to maximize competition and to be fair is to accept all applicants who meet a pre-announced, open, neutral, and objective standard of competence. You can define competence in lots of interesting ways. Financial might be part of that. But it shouldn't be making case-by-case allocations decisions and amateurish comparative hearings. It's just not right. And it doesn't work, and it's shown us that. Let me also, in my last minute, suggest to you an alternate approach to GTLD creation. One that would certainly enhance competition and would take its inspiration from the fundamental design of the Internet and from major league sports. The Internet was designed to continue to function even if large parts of the network sustained damage. The Internet network design avoids, whenever possible, the creation of single points of failure. But when it comes to policy, ICANN right now is that single point of failure. A solution to the problem would therefore be to share out the policy function and leave in ICANN only the coordinating functions. What it would do then would be to keep a master list of TLDs to prevent collisions, make sure no two registries ever tried to run the same string, fix an annual quota of new GTLDs, run an annual GTLD draft, just like the pros do with the college athletes, and coordinate the new process so that the GTLDs come on stream in an orderly way, not all at once. Each of ICANN's policy partners, and they could be groups from all around the world, governments, civil society groups, corporations, we can have a real healthy mix, would get some draft choices. Some would get one, some might get more. And then ICANN would randomly or otherwise assign them the picks and work the system. Thank you very much.
Very good. Mr. Davidson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the subcommittee. I am Alan Davidson, Associate Director of the Center for Democracy and Technology, CDT, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. CDT is a nonprofit public interest organization dedicated to promoting civil liberties and democratic values on the Internet. We have been active in the domain name issue as advocates for open and representative governance mechanisms that protect basic human rights, the interests of internet users, and the public voice, the appropriate public voice in these kinds of decisions. I've entered a statement for the record, but I'd like to try to emphasize a few elements of it. We believe in the promise of ICANN, the possibility laid out in the white paper of a non-governmental, bottom-up, self-governance organization in the best traditions of the Internet. And, you know, we believe that that kind of mechanism is what's most appropriate for a global network that needs flexibility and rapid change in its organizational institutions, and that the possibility of ICANN as the non-governmental flexible organization is one that would maximize openness and competition and individual liberty online. And so our comments are offered as a critique of the GTLD process and of ICANN, and as a roadmap for fixing what we view it as, in many ways, a flawed process, as you've heard today. Our bottom line, however, is that the Commerce Department and this Congress should not undo this decision that ICANN has made, because on balance, our belief is that the interests of consumers in the expansion of the GTLD space and the danger of the U.S. government intervening in a heavy-handed way outweigh the benefits of redoing what is admittedly a flawed process. I'd like to quickly make 4 points. The first is that ICANN's decisions, and particularly its selection of new GTLDs, do raise issues of public concern. In an ideal world, this would be a boring hearing, and this would be a boring issue. I guess some people in the audience might say we've succeeded in part of that, but I think that there are many reasons to believe that ICANN is in fact an important institution that we should be paying attention to. There are at least 2 reasons. One is that there is a potential for ICANN to be a much more of a central authority and a policymaking body for the internet. In an otherwise decentralized world, ICANN sits on centralized functions of coordination for the internet from which it can exert a much broader set of authorities. It has, to its credit, not done so to date, but a future more powerful ICANN might choose to do something differently. Even the technical decisions that ICANN makes can, the quote-unquote technical decisions, can have broader policy impacts. The GTLD example is a very good one. There is a clear free speech interest in the creation of new namespaces. It affects the way that people navigate and find information on the internet, and ICANN's decision, albeit a good one based on the needs for stability and the interests of trademark owners and others, to create a narrow test bed, when in fact there are probably technical reasons to think that ICANN could have created many more TLDs, led it down a road of having to make what many believe were arbitrary decisions, or at least policy-based decisions, to go from this objective set of people who could have created TLDs to the 7 that ultimately ICANN chose. Second, the ICANN board, as a threshold matter, we might ask, is this structure that made this decision appropriately representative? And I think there are many reasons to believe that the current ICANN structure is not broadly representative of the internet community. I'll just speak quickly as from the experience of a nonprofit group who's tried to participate in ICANN. It is a community that's receptive to input, but that at the same time is very difficult to participate in, with meetings all over the world. It's difficult for many organizations are not represented there, and we have had a difficulty in creating a civil society, a meaningful, active civil society community in ICANN to represent the public interest. ICANN's process for selecting the GTLDs, in fact, was flawed. As we've heard today, and as is spelled out in our testimony, there are many reasons to believe the process could have done better. I think the $50,000 barrier to entry for, especially had a big impact on non-commercial players. That's not to say that no entry fee should have been required, but there could have been a way to waive it, especially for nonprofit groups. Finally, as I've said, I think on balance our belief is that a rollback is not what is required here, but that moving forward ICANN needs to reform its process to stay out of the policymaking game, to create a prime directive of sorts that keeps it out of the policymaking business and that restores ICANN to its promise of being a bottom-up, technical, objective, policymaking, non-policymaking body that's representative of the public interest in the domain's namespace. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you all. And I'm going to be just as quick on the gavel on the members up here, I want you to know. So we'll try to speak fast as well. Mr. Davidson, I appreciated your comments on the end, at the end of the panel here as well. And I know I viewed this hearing as a constructive one from the get-go, and try to make things better, particularly when we hear a number of complaints, not only from you all, but others across the country and even the world. And I know, Mr. Cerf, as you embarked on this adventure, you had to have known that you were going to be subject to criticism at the end. In fact, that was buried in your remarks as well in terms of the fee and what may come out in terms of the legal challenges later on. And as I understand it, you have always purported that, at least ICANN has always purported, that it is in fact a purely technical coordination policy. Maybe, use Mr. Davidson's words, pretty boring if it's just that. But it's not. We know that it's not. In fact, you play a very significant role in the policy side of things and the implications for the internet as well. And as you look back, and you had to, I know that you were aware of some of these criticisms before this hearing, how was it that you only chose seven? You indicated that you felt that the process was overwhelming in terms of the comments and the numbers, the names that came in, but why was it that you only chose seven instead of 10, 12, 15, 20? The complaint, of course, is on 3 minutes at the end. A lot of decisions were made before that, and even in this hearing process with a full house, you get 5 minutes, not three. Why is it that you took, in essence, I think it's been about 10 years, 8 to 10 years since we came up with our first domain names. Why couldn't it have lasted a couple more weeks so that, in fact, a variety of different players would be able to find out exactly what the criticisms were and you be able to respond to them and perhaps make some adjustments so that you weren't locked in at 7? You know, as I began my preparation for the hearing, I helped chair the hearing back in 1999 as well. Personally, I think a dot travel would have made a lot of sense. I travel too, and you know, whether it's a rental car or a place to stay, dot travel makes more personal sense than maybe just dot aero in terms of the entire need of the traveling public, whether they be on business travel or individual. So there's a lot of questions out there, and I guess if you had the chance 2 years ago to have heard a number of the complaints here, criticisms, some positive, some negative, where would you have changed things, particularly as you look to the future in terms of opening up that door again?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really like the boring idea a lot.
Yeah.
That if we could get to that
the
state.
The line outside the door still goes around.
First of all, I think it would be helpful to keep in mind what our objective was in this first go-around. We had had, as you know, a great deal of discussion over a period of years about how many top-level domains should be increased, how many should be added to the system, and we didn't come to any consensus. All the advice that we got was to start slow and start carefully, but there was no absolute number, so we didn't have we weren't fixed at 7 particularly. That's where we ended up. Our objective, though, was to get a test case with a fairly broad range of different kinds of TLDs into operation and see what would happen. The current circumstances of the internet, as you know, are heavily commercially oriented now, whereas 10 years ago they weren't. And so the conditions under which the first TLDs, gTLDs, were created was very different from 2001. So our objective was to simply start with a small number selected from a set that were offered to us through by the applicants. We never expected as a board to approve every single application which might be qualified to operate as a TLD. We anticipated, however, once we got the results of the first new TLDs in operation, that we would use that to guide our next selections. And indeed, I think and hope that once we do get results from this first set, we will be able to simplify the process and I hope make it a lot easier for the applicants. I might also mention that about the $50,000 fee, we made estimates about how much time and energy would be required to evaluate the proposals, bearing in mind that we would scrutinize these pretty carefully, given this is the first time we've done anything of this type. It turns out that in the long run, One hopes that one could reduce that cost, assuming the process becomes very boring. The one thing I would point out is that had the fee been significantly lower, we might have gotten more than 47 proposals, in which case we would have had even more difficulty processing them. So in a funny sense, there's a balance that was fortunately met. We've consumed about half of the funds that were made available, and we're yet not done with all the negotiations with the new applicants.
So much for my 2 minutes. I think we will have a second round of questions, so we'll come back. Mr. Markey.
I thank you very much. We probably should have done this for 3 minutes just to get a sense of what it's like to try to get to the important issue.
I'd be glad to take 2 minutes
off. Just to get out one question is difficult in 5 minutes. First of all, Mr. Cerf, you and the others who developed DARPANET are clearly, amongst the geniuses of our time, and we very much appreciate everything that you did to develop DARPANET, which turned into Internet. And it is true, back in the old days, you and the other founding fathers and mothers of DARPANET were able to just get together and work out whatever standards were necessary, and it worked very well. But we've now transitioned over the last 8 or 10 years into a commercial model, and most of the people who were once with DARPANET are now in private sector jobs, not this university setting that was originally the basis for the development of it. So my first question to you would be, were the 7 selected the only applicants that met the technical and financial standards?
No. In other words, there were others.
How did you weigh the criteria then to whittle it down to 7? In other words, at MIT, if 3,000 kids have 800s in their boards and there's only 1,000 seats, then of course all these kids with 800s who worked hard will always, but that's a private sector. I mean, that's a kind of a university setting. Here we're kind of in a quasi-public situation where the Department of Commerce has subcontracted this to you. So if more than 7 actually had qualified applications, what did you then use to disqualify everyone but the 7?
Well, keep in mind, of course, that our intent was to establish a modest number for purposes of doing the experiment. So our objective was indeed to not have all 47 or whatever number qualified. There was discussion towards the end of the period of debate on which one should be accepted. And as each one of those was considered, issues were raised that caused the board ultimately to form consensus around only those 7.
Of the 47, how many actually met the technical and financial standards?
I'm not sure that I remember exactly the number, but it probably was more than 7.
But was it more like 10 or more like 20 that met the technical and financial standards?
It's very hard just to say because there were a number of different criteria. Some of these proposals met some of the criteria.
No, but what I'm saying is, did you reach a semi-final stage in your process whereby you whittled out of the 47 down to 20? Or did you win? How did you get to the final 7?
The last discussions, as I remember them, were somewhere around 10.
10. Now, let me ask you, Mr. Kerner, if you want to appeal this decision, what is the appeal process that you would use if you're unhappy with what Dr. Cerf and the others have decided in terms of whittling down from 10 to 7? Let's assume you're one of the 3 that was excluded. How would you appeal now?
Well, ICANN has a process for reconsideration, and we've applied to be reconsidered. That, according to ICANN's policy, they are supposed to respond to that in 30 days.
What is the criteria which they have given you in order to file your appeal?
It's a very general reconsideration policy. It's not particular to the TLD selection process we just went through.
Let me ask then, Dr. Sipp, what criteria would you look at on appeal in order to expand the number of...
The reconsideration process, as Mr. Kerner points out, is a very general one. It's for any actions taken by the board, and principally it looks to see whether process was followed. It is not intended as to reconsider decisions made by the board on the merits. In fact, one of the things that allowed us to, I think, achieve consensus was the belief that any of the qualifying TLD applications would in fact be considered later once we had
let me with the Professor Frumkin then. Let me ask you, Professor Frumkin. Due process, it seems to me, isn't an analog or a digital concept. It's just an American concept, huh, of fair play. So as you look at the process, do you believe that there Dr. Cerf is saying he's not going to look at the merits, only whether or not the process was fair, huh? Do you believe that the process was fair in the selection of the seven and the exclusion of the other 40?
Well, if we look by the standards that would be applied to a federal administrative agency, there's no question in my mind that a court would find they were not.
They were not.
Well,
not.
In particular, I'd like to point out that...
Well, let me ask you this. Was the criteria subjective or technical?
There were clearly some technical criteria used to get rid of a few, and then they went subjective ones. I watched the whole thing happen, and I did not see a moment where they said, okay, here's the batch who meet minimum criteria, now what do? They went at them one at a time. The criteria were applied what appeared to be somewhat, let's say, erratically to different applications. So it was not this tiered process of here's the semifinalists, and now let's have a beauty contest.
Do you agree with that, Mr. Short, the process for appeal?
Absolutely. I'd just like to concur with what the professor said about the criteria being applied erratically. And to give an example, in the category that ICANN placed the IATA application, which was called restricted commercial content, one of the other applicants was .pro, which was successful. They were not asked to and did not make any showing on the record of representativeness. We, on the other hand, were disqualified solely because ICANN found that we were not representative. And despite, as I said earlier, the fact that 1 million travel industry businesses around the world went on the record saying they agreed with our proposal.
So you believe you were rejected on a subjective rather than on a technical basis?
Absolutely, and I believe, sir, that the record bears that out.
Okay.
We'll have a second round.
Mr. Davidson just wants 30 seconds.
Yes, I just was going to say, I think you're really onto something here, which is to say that, yes, I thought you, anyway, the, that...
Even a blind squirrel finds an acorn.
Every now and then. The criteria, ICANN published a detailed set of criteria. That was a very welcome move. Some of those criteria were technical and economic and objectively applied. Some of them, as much as we agreed on ideas like diversity and competition, they are not easily objectively applied, and I think the board, in retrospect, did not do so.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Recognize the chairman of the full committee, Mr. Kozan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, Mr. Chairman, let me thank you for the hearing. I think this is an excellent first start for the subcommittee. And like Mr. Markey, Mr. Cerf, I also want to welcome you and thank you and our good friend Al for the pioneering work you did on the Internet. Secondly, let me say, this discussion you just had is settled in Mr. Cerf's testimony. If you look on page 26, he indicates the criteria for being included in this experiment were in some measure subjective. There's an admission that this was a subjective process, which raises the question, Mr. Cerf. You also say that the effort was not a contest to find the most qualified or the most worthy or the most attractive. Why not?
I think because we didn't believe that it was necessary to do that in order to conduct a credible experiment and in order to get the data that we needed to determine whether or not we could open this process.
But you understand the concern of applicants who met all your criteria.
Yes.
And then learn that your selection process was subjective and it was not designed to find the most qualified, most worthy, or most attractive applicant. In ordinary business practices, that would be considered rather unfair.
In this case, it was considered, what we needed was a sufficient set of candidates who we thought would likely successfully function so that we could then open this up to our test case.
Well, I only make the point, I'm not sure that the relief some of these applicants are asking for is merited under the circumstances, but you'll be doing this in the future. And one of the concerns, I think, of this committee is whether or not in the future, as you go forward with approving new TLDs, whether or not the criteria is going to be a bit more objective and a bit more designed to find the most qualified, most worthy, and for the consuming public, the most attractive TLDs.
Well, in fact, what I hope is that the criteria can be so objective that we don't have to make any value judgments about the likelihood of business success of the applicants or any of those other things.
Let me quickly put on record something I put in my opening statement, Mr. Chairman. I believe it's already been made part of the record. And that is, Mr. Serva, I hope in the future you and your representatives will pay attention to our committee rule on testimony being submitted 48 hours in advance. The committee members read this testimony, need to prepare for these hearings, and I was a little disappointed that our staff was unable to get your testimony within the time of our rules. I hope all of you will follow those rules in the future. Let me conclude with an area that really intrigues me, and that is the questions posed by Ms. Gallegos to this process. In selecting a TLD that is already currently being used as .biz, that raises several concerns. There are more than one root server. You obviously govern the USG domain name system root server, but there are others. There's the Open Root Server Council, the Pacific Root Server System, all of which have alternative approved TLDs in their systems. In choosing a TLD that is already being used, as in the case of Ms. Gallegos, recognizing that all the personal computers we buy today have a default system that points to the USG domain name system, did you not realize that you would be affecting her business and perhaps negatively and financially if every one of her customers has to literally reroute a computer so that it doesn't automatically point to your own root system, root server system?
There is a serious problem with the notion of alternate routes.
I understand that.
The original design of the system had a single route for very good reason. It is to make sure there was no ambiguity as to what a particular domain name would translate into. The alternate routes were not introduced with the concurrence and agreement of the existing initial government root-based system. And if we were to allow any arbitrary entity to create alternate domain names in alternate routes, we will have exactly the situation that we can see emerging right now. If you have anyone who can create an alternate route and then create a domain name which happens to be the same as some other domain name in a different alternate route, you have
What happens when they collide?
Well, what happens is that you get one or the other of the translations, but you don't get both. And worse, you have uncertainty as to who is on the other end of the line. Ms. Gallegos, I thought, made a very good point about the dangers of having ambiguity, but that is the consequence of even having an alternate route system. That's why ICANN continues to believe there should be only one route.
You believe that? Have you received legal opinions regarding the selection of .biz?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Did you receive legal opinions regarding the selection of .biz as it relates to the use of .biz by alternate DNS root servers?
Yes, I did.
Can you address Ms. Gallegos' complaints here today?
My understanding is that the creation of alternate routes, since it was outside of ICANN's purview, does not bind ICANN to any decisions made by the alternate route activity. We are responsible for a single route system, and that is the bounds of our responsibility.
But do you have the authority, I guess is what I'm asking, to overrun an alternate route server? Because essentially that's what you're doing. When you approve a .biz under USG domain system root server, and all of our computers basically point to your system automatically in default, unless we adjust them.
Well,
are you not overrunning the alternate route, and do you have that authority in law?
Let me turn this around for just a moment and point out that for any alternate route to work, you have to go and modify the customer's personal computer to point to the alternate route, not to the U.S.
that.
Government route. So already there has been some damage in some sense done to the architecture, because now that particular customer has to be modified specially instead of what comes naturally from the manufacturers. Our responsibility to ICANN, as I understand it, is to manage the creation of top-level domains within that single root, and that's my understanding of the scope of our responsibility.
Well, just to finalize, Mr. Chairman, that has the effect of overrunning, does it not, the alternative root system?
Yes, although I would also turn this around and say the creation of the alternate root system has the effect of potentially overrunning the single root that ICANN runs. We have no control over someone who creates domain names which conflict with those that have been assigned within the ICANN purview.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Shimkus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is obviously a great hearing. Dr. Surface, pleased to have you back here. First question, how many board members are on the board?
19.
It's established through a contract from the Department of Commerce. How are we assured that, let me ask it a different way. Are there any financial disclosure requirements on board members that are accessible to the public?
There are no financial disclosure requirements that I'm aware of. However, we do ask the board members to advise us of any conflicts of interest that they might have in the conduct of their service as an ICANN.
So if we have a subjective system, decision-making process, with the public not having, or the applicants not knowing through a open disclosure system, possible conflicts of interest, that raises concerns. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, they certainly could. May I point out that during the course of the review of the TLD applications, four of our board members voluntarily recused themselves on what proved to be fairly thin concerns over conflict.
And I applaud that, but I would say that if this is a contractual arrangement with the federal government that's making business decisions that are affecting applicants who have a financial interest, who may not know a possible conflict of interest of the board members, that's something that you ought to rectify.
Indeed.
Everyone else, when you come appear before us, you're supposed to identify what government contracts that you all have. And we have to do it as members of Congress. So I think that is an issue that you ought to look at.
Thank you. That's a good point.
I'm a West Point graduate and served as a recruiter for the academies, and we have very highly qualified young men and women who apply to the service academies every year. And it's not different from everyone meeting, 47 people meeting the criteria established for the domain names. They have an issue. What they do is develop a whole candidate score, and they do a scoring based upon some subjective issues. But there is still a score. And then the academies, based upon this score and the openings, choose those who get acceptance letters. Subjectivity without scoring raises the level of disputes, which, if there's no quantitative possibility of analysis or even defense, that's why we're here. And again, just another recommendation. Question. Politically, you would have had a stronger, favorable receiving from this committee had you used your position to address pornographic material on the internet. Understand that, and many of us feel that you failed in a great opportunity, especially as politicians. When we're addressing this, you invite us now to legislatively get involved in forcing this issue because of the cries of the public. And those of us who understand First Amendment principles, how do we protect the individual's right to free speech while ensuring that our children are protected? So I would like to ask, our understanding that it was rejected due to the controversy surrounding the idea. Again, it may be a subjective type of analysis, I'm not sure. How is a .XXX avenue any different than current zoning laws or issues in which the public has kind of addressed this in other mediums?
There was discussion of XXX, and one of the problems that we encountered is not knowing how we would prevent any pornographic sites from registering in other than XXX. The principal question was enforcement. It wasn't clear how to do that and whether it could be effectively done. The sites which already exist presumably have established their brands, if you'll, I guess that's the right word. And we don't know, or we're not clear at the time that we were making these TLD decisions, what mechanism would be available to move them away from where they are.
Since my time's expired, then let me just go to the flip question. Since you didn't want to address that, why didn't you address the green light domain, an area of protection of kids? If you weren't going to do it on the punitive aspect, why not do something positive?
We actually, there was a lot of sympathy for the .kids domain, which I assume you're thinking about. And there was quite a bit of discussion about this. One of the things that kept returning to the theme of the discussion is that all of these are global domains. And there came a moment when many realized that it wasn't clear what .kids actually meant. In other words, what is a child at what age? You know, what is the age range for which this material would be considered appropriate? And given that .kids is global, it wasn't clear what criteria would be applicable globally for content that would be acceptable. In some countries, things might be acceptable. In other countries, they might not, for the same age ranges. And it got less and less clear as the discussion ensued how it would be possible to specify satisfactorily what those limitations were, and then again, how would they be enforced? And perhaps in the worst case, suppose that a parent sees something on .kids that he or she felt was inappropriate, would that now come back to ICANN? Would we be sued for having permitted inappropriate content? We didn't see how we could enforce it.
I know my time's expired. I would just say you're inviting us to have many more of these hearings to address some of these issues, and I wish you would have solved them. I yield back my time.
Mr. Pickering.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate this hearing and the very importance of what we are discussing today. From the very beginning of this debate, I was fortunate enough to be a part, first on the Science Committee as the acting chairman of the Basic Research Committee, as we first went from looking at the transition from a government-run monopoly-based policy in domain names to a non-governmental, private, competitive model. And my concern all the way through has been somewhat different, but I think highlighted by this hearing today. Many, I believe, did not realize that in essence, by setting up ICANN, and what we're doing was fundamentally the constitution of the Internet. Just as our founders set up the decision-making process of a representative democracy, the House, the Senate, the executive, the judicial, making sure that you had the openness and the transparency, hopefully the credibility and the confidence and the integrity of the decisions being made, and then the checks and balances of that process. And what we have today is, as Mr. Davidson talked about, the great promise and the great potential of what we had hoped for at the very beginning, and that is a grassroots, bottom-up, inclusive, open, international body that will be making the decisions as we govern the Internet and the use of the Internet. But as Mr. Davidson highlighted his concerns, and I would like to associate myself with his concerns, I think he captures where we are today and where we need to be. That we do need immediate reform, and I hope it is done voluntarily. We still have the promise of a non-governmental, private, open, competitive model. That is the objective and the policy that I want to see. But the way that this has occurred to date, I'm concerned, as Mr. Davidson is, that the process was arbitrary, subjective. Decisions are being questioned, the confidence, the credibility, the integrity is in question, and that if we do not take our steps toward reform quickly, that the promise and the potential of ICANN and what we're trying to do could be at risk. Mr. Davidson, let me ask the rest of the panel, how many of you have read Mr. Davidson's testimony or would agree with the reforms that he has laid out in his testimony? Mr. Cerf?
I'm not sure that I'm prepared to agree to all of them, but I absolutely accept the idea that we need to re-examine the procedures that we used. I certainly would like something simpler and less complicated than we had to go through in November. So I welcome Mr. Davidson's organization's inputs and others who have constructively commented today.
Mr. Short, Ms. Gallagher, y'all were very critical of the process. Have y'all had a chance to read Mr. Davidson's testimony?
His testimony?
Or his reforms?
No, I have not had a chance to read them. I'm sorry.
If I could ask you to respond to the committee in writing as we conclude the hearing today as to your comments or your views concerning his proposed reforms, that would be helpful to the committee. Mr. Davidson?
Well, Mr. Pickering, I very much appreciate those remarks, and I do think that there is a sense here that we don't want to throw the baby out here, that there is a potential here. And I've tried to lay out some steps. I think there are things that many in the ICANN community agree with, especially the notion of really trying to focus ICANN's mission of being as much as possible a technical and objective body. I think, unfortunately, the process that we have right now on GTLDs shows how easy it is to morph out of that world, and I'm hopeful that we can all work together to try and make it better, and I think get the appropriate level of public input where it's needed to the extent that ICANN does engage in policy-oriented activities. Thank you.
Mr. Short.
Thank you, Mr. Pickering. I have to say I have not had an opportunity to read Mr. Davidson's testimony yet. It was just provided to me this morning. But I would say that we feel the all we are asking for really is a fair shake. We're not asking this committee or Congress to direct that we get DOT travel, but we feel the record makes it abundantly clear what has happened is not in conformity with the requirements of the Administrative Procedure Act or basic notions of due process, a point I think Professor Frumkin has confirmed. And that any reforms that would take the process in that direction, which I think is essential for any asset funded by the U.S. government, we would certainly support. Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Gallegos. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
It's Gallegos.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Everybody does the same thing. In terms of the APA, we, of course, had a petition for rulemaking, that was presented to the DOC. We haven't heard anything on that yet. We would really like to see that take place. I think that one of the problems that we have perceived is that there really is no public process. There is no due process. There is no appeals process. There is no transparency, and most of what is done by ICANN is done in secret. The deliberations and considerations over all of these GTLDs was done in secret. We knew nothing, the public knew nothing until we saw the reviews that were published on the website, which were woefully inadequate. I think that the premise behind having an ICANN is a good one. I think that to throw it out, it's like cutting the head off of the monster, it grows back too. I think what we need to do is look at ICANN as something that needs to be reformatted, perhaps, but it's a good idea. From our perspective also, we need to look at, as opposed to what Mr. Cerf had said, the alternative routes were formed for a reason. IANA did facilitate the first alternative route because there were supposed to be new TLDs entered into the route. They were promised and they were not given. The route was formed because of that, and it needed to be a test bed, so IANA approved the formation of that route. Then it was scrapped, so all of that time, effort, and money had gone into that, proved that the route was workable, proved that it could coexist, and then it was scrapped. So they said, well, we have it, let's use it, and that's what they've been doing. And this has been going on for many, many, many years. We do coexist, and there is no reason for our government to take the posture that we can just wipe out a business because we can. And basically, this is what has happened. I think that there is a lot of merit in looking at the coexistence. And not only that, but a very simple solution to having new TLDs, use the ones that are already there, are working, have been proven to work, and are successful. And you might have a good avenue. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have some additional questions, but I'll wait to the second round. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you. Professor Frumkin, you indicated in your testimony you raised the question, how many are needed? How many do you think we need?
I think that's a decision only the market can tell us. And I think if people are willing to take the trouble to build them and go through a modest application process and run them, do whatever other things we require of them, maybe even a small bond, whatever it takes to, you know, to meet a threshold, as long as we're willing to do that, let's let the market decide. I couldn't begin to know how any human being would know the answer to that question.
Yeah. Dr. Cerf, your question, your answer to Mr. Markey that you thought it about 10 or so were actually sufficient past all of the barriers to be approved. Did you ever consider as a body whether in fact you had to move the number from 7 to 10 or 11 or 9? Or was it, at what point did you lock in 7?
We locked in 7 at the, in fact, we went down from a collection that looked like they might be adequate down to 7 of them that we had full consensus on. The board did not uniformly agree on all 10. That's my opinion, was that maybe that many were acceptable, but we were looking for full consensus on the board. We achieved full consensus on 7 of them, and since that lay within the range that all the recommendations were to start with, I felt satisfied that the board had come to a reasonable conclusion, especially given the belief that we would add more of them once we could demonstrate that this first set, in fact, worked adequately and didn't cause any trouble.
Now, is this process that you embarked on, is it pretty much over now? I mean, that's that, and at what point are you looking for a second round?
Two things have to happen before I think we would be well advised to proceed to a second round. First, we need to complete the negotiations with the applicants. Those negotiations are ongoing but not complete. And second, we need to get some experience with what happens as those new TLDs are introduced. I'm sure you're familiar with terms like land rush or gold rush and so on. We don't know, quite honestly, what kinds of behavior we will see from the market as these new TLDs are introduced. Some of them are of the restricted type, like dot museum, but others are quite open, like dot info. And so we don't know what the behavior will be, and until we can see that, I would say it was probably inadvisable to begin reconsideration of additional TLDs. I hope that we could do that with about 6 months of experience with the new ones.
The all ICANN accredited registers currently here adhere to this agreement, which, among other things, requires registers to provide real-time public access to registrant contact information, who is data. Consumers, law enforcement, intellectual property owners, among others, rely on this public availability of who is data. What is your sense as to whether you intend, and this is a question for Mr. Kerner through Ms. Gallegos, what is your sense as to whether embracing the policy set forth in this register agreement in any new TLDs that you might operate? Mr. Kerner?
As the current operators of the .tv top-level domain, we in fact have a very robust, easily accessible whois that we find is used quite frequently by trademark holders. And we actually find that that ICANN's UDRP, a resolution procedure, is actually quite effective in enabling trademark holders to get back their trademarks.
Ms. Brodman.
In the Registry Pro application, we designed a system that is slightly different from today's system. That was on the advice of a lot of consensus thinking, and that is what's known as a thick whois database, where all of the information resides in a single place, so that a trademark owner, for example, could go to a single place to do the searching for cyber squatters.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, we are our back-end provider actually is NuStar, New Level, and so Mr. Hansen can provide more of the technical information, but I would just say we are fully committed to protection of intellectual property rights, and it's my understanding we were proposing to offer the highest level of WHOIS service as part of our proposal. Thank you.
The new technology that we have proposed creates the ability to create a centralized database, and this centralized database, because of a new protocol that would be used to collect data from the registrars, allows for the collection of data that is of a much higher quality than you would find in today's very distributed model. The registrars today inconsistently collect data. Some collect data better than others. It's updated in some cases very rigorously. In other cases, it is not. The requirement a centralized database can impose upon the registrars in terms of submitting a consistent set of data that will be contained in the database will actually be an enhancement that the trademark and intellectual property community should embrace, partly because today they do have to go around to all of these various databases to collect the data. Reliability of the data, the consistency of the data is questionable.
Mr. David?
Yeah, I'd just like to make a very quick comment to say that we should note that there are some privacy aspects to this whole question of the availability of WHOIS data and what exactly is included in there. I think these are rules that still, I mean, these privacy concerns are being raised, especially as many more individuals and small businesses get involved in registering domain names and find certain kinds of information that might be personal being put into the database. I think it's a question for ongoing debate about how we balance those interests and find ways to give, you know, protect legitimate interest in getting this data while still protecting the privacy, especially of consumers and non-commercial interests.
Mr. Gallegos, do you want to?
I think I'd like to, if it's okay with you, relate just one story. When I started my business, it was a Soho, small office, home office. And when I got my first domain name, I had no choice but to put all of the relevant information into the thick WHOIS. And as a result of that, I was stalked. I had to change my phone number. I had to have security dogs. I finally got a post office box and started using that. There are some very serious privacy issues, and with more and more businesses operating out of their homes now, that means that a person has to give up his personal information, put his family at risk. So I think that you know, we need to consider that. I know that with the .biz, we have a thick WHOIS, and it does have all of the relevant information, but we're going to be instituting a situation where people can use a dummy contact that will show up in the WHOIS, and if there is a need for that information to be given to a person who has legitimate need for that information, it will be given, but only with an order. And as far as intellectual property is concerned, that Act was designed for the consumer and not for the trademark holder, and I think that we need to really protect the consumer and let the trademark holder police his marks. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mark.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Here's what I'd like. I'd like each one of you to give us your top level recommendation. Your one recommendation for improving the ICANN process. Or ICANN, as we say up in Boston, ICANN. So we'll go right down, one recommendation to improve the ICANN process. Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, and I just want to say, by the way, it's been our observation over the years that, in fact, yes, sir, you are no blind squirrel. So thank you for your earlier question. I guess my number one recommendation would be the institution of a prime directive in the mindset of ICANN that is to always stay out of policy-oriented decision-making as much as possible and stick as much as possible to the technical and objectively measured approach. It may not always be possible, but I think, for example, even in the GTLD context, if it turned out that you had 20 otherwise absolutely equal people and you felt compelled to only choose seven, do a lottery. Do something. Stay out of the business of even as attractive as it may be to many of us, stay out of the business of trying to make policy.
Right, thank you. Mr. Professor.
I would put that slightly differently, but close. I think ICANN needs to be told it's got to take one of two roads and not try to mix the two. Either it becomes a true standards body and does the kind of things that Alan Davidson was just talking about, or it's going to have to be recognized as doing policy given its relationship with the Department of Commerce as a state actor, a governmental body, and be subjected to the APA and the Constitution. And this is heresy to say among Internet people, but this is an issue that's bigger than the Internet. In this issue, what the Department of Commerce has tried to do with these strange zero-cost procurement contracts, these research contracts where the research turns out to be running things and so on, is a blueprint for an end run around accountable government and the APA. And if ICANN can be put in back in the standards body box where it probably could live very happily in a more modest vision, I think everybody, or a lot of people, would be really happy. That'd be great. But if it takes the other road, it's got to understand the consequences, and those need to be applied to it.
By APA, you mean the Administrative Procedures Act, which is kind of the constitution for all decisions that are made in all administrative agencies in terms of protecting due process and using a reasonableness standard.
When I go back to Miami, I'm going to tell my students that Congress gets it.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me, what was your final?
When I go back to Miami, I'm going to tell my students that Congress gets it.
Congress gets it. Uh-huh. See, some people define that Congress gets it by saying, well, you know, Congress knows that it can never understand these issues, so they don't ask questions. But I would prefer to use your definition, which is that we get it when we do understand and we're asking relevant questions. Thank you. Ms. Gallegos.
Representative Markey, thank you. I think I'd have to echo what the professor has said. We need to keep it technical. It's either going to be a standards body or it's going to be a governmental body, and let's decide what it's going to be. And while I disagree that it should be a governmental body, I think it should go to the private sector and it should be a standards body only. But I think the one thing that we really have to recognize from the get-go is that the board seated itself. It has never been elected, and we have an interim board that's been an interim board since the beginning, except for the five elected members. I think that the whole board needs to be elected appropriately, and maybe that's a start if we have the proper representation. Right now, we have a special interest representation, except for the five elected members.
Thank you.
And thank you.
By the way, I would recommend that we have a hearing with just the five members here, and we'd just be allowed to ask them questions. Mr. Hansen.
Yes, the recommendation I would make, focusing on the process itself, is I think it would have been helpful had minimum qualifications for applications, the companies who were submitting applications, for instance, be established up front at the beginning of the process. That may have resulted in fewer applications, but probably would have helped on the once the selections were made, people would understand that, you know, they wouldn't submit an application at the beginning if their company wasn't qualified based on the minimum criteria established by ICANN. So you'd have fewer applications. That would enhance the assessment process, allow more time to focus on the fewer number of applications, and would improve the quality of the applications as well.
Thank you. Mr. Short.
Thank you, Mr. Markey. Our principal recommendation would be that the Administrative Procedure Act principles should apply to decision-making in this area. What we would be looking for is fairness and an actual decision on the record. I just add that before going off to join IATA, I spent many years here in Washington as a regulatory lawyer and have some familiarity with proceedings under the APA. And while there are always going to be winners and losers, at least in my assessment, the APA principles generally deliver results that are in the public interest, and that's really all we're asking for here. Thank you.
Ms. Brightman.
Thank you, Congressman. I think that one of the opportunities to reform the process in the future is to provide a bit more time during the entire process, and particularly between an intermediate recommendation and the final board decision. What was very helpful, actually, in the ICANN process is that there were questions and answers on the record, as well as public comment periods on the record during the entire six-week period. And in the future, having some more of that sort of opportunity beyond the staff report, I think, would be helpful to all.
Mr. Kerner.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think we would have most, speaking as an applicant, appreciated an iterative open selection process where we could have had a dialogue, ICANN could have had a dialogue with all of the applicants to address the issues and concerns that they had, and thus decisions wouldn't have been reached by the board that was based on factually inaccurate information provided by the staff report. Dr. Cerf indicated that 7 final selections were made from what he estimated at 10 qualified applicants. I don't think that he considered either one of our applications from .nom or .pro to be qualified applicants because the staff had indicated that our consortium did not have the technical capabilities to run a top-level domain. And that was said even though, you know, again, we had a proven robust technical infrastructure that was capable of resolving domain names at about 10 times the rate is currently experienced in .com.
Dr. Cerf. I think the most salient thing for us, apart from some very good suggestions that we've just heard, is in fact to find more objective ways of making these decisions wherever we can. And as I said before, to make them as boring as possible.
And what would be the one recommendation you would make in order to make the process more clear?
I would like to see that the objective criteria are principally that the applicant simply be able to demonstrate technical capability to perform the function. The big concern in this first go-around was that if the applicants also didn't have the financial and other ability to execute, that we might not have a very good proof of concept because some of them wouldn't work at all. But in the long run, it would be nice to let the market decide that.
Thank you, Doctor.
Mr. Shimkus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hansen, in your opinion, did the criteria posted and used by ICANN change along the way, or did ICANN act consistently throughout the process?
I believe ICANN did act consistently as it applies to the criteria that were laid out. We understood at the very beginning that stability of the internet was the number one priority, and we focused on that in our application. We focused on the technical aspects of our proposal for that very reason, and we other ways in which we could support stability of the internet in introducing the new top-level domain name.
Thank you. The Mr. Kernan, I always find it interesting on the disclosure. You have indicated that ICANN made poor choices in selecting these top-level domains, although you also submitted 2 that were accepted. Is that correct?
That's correct. Both the .nom, we were part of 2 consortiums, .nom and .pro.
Why do you think you were successful in the 2 and not successful in the other?
I don't think that it's possible for me to address those individually. You know, I just think by definition, if you have a flawed process, by definition, the results of that process are going to be flawed as well.
But was it flawed in the selection of the 2 that got accepted?
I think we believe that the entire process was flawed, and that if you have...
So should we undo the 2 that were selected?
I think what we're proposing is basically we start again at the beginning and we institute a fair and open process.
And I agree with that. I'm just... This is always fun. It may not be fun for people on the panels, and I've been on the other side too, but there is discrepancy in the testimony when you're attacking a system that you've also benefited by successfully. In one part it's failed, but the other part it was successful in 2 applications, which you supported. That's correct, right?
I'm sorry. Let me just clarify to make sure that we're both talking from the same page here. We made applications for, again, the .nom and .pro. Our applications were not accepted. Other applicants for the same top-level domains were accepted. Now, obviously, we think that those would be good choices for this first round.
So your track record in this most recent round is 0?
Correct. 0 for 2.
Okay. Well, then I can see why you're upset. And Mr. Cerf, or Dr. Cerf, the last question is the $5,000 non-refundable fee. You're a non-for-profit corporation. Obviously, the basic financial record should be available. And this is an experimental round. I know you probably haven't done an after-action review of cost-benefit analysis and the time, effort, and trying to... Are you expecting the cost to go up in the next round, or the cost to go down? And is there another... Is the application process more... I think there's an agreement that there should be more transparency, and there probably should be transparency in the fee structure based upon Ms. Galagos's testimony.
The fee structure is based almost entirely on what the costs turn out to be for evaluating proposals. I mean, that is the principal basis.
But you have to set the fee structure before you accept the proposal.
Yes, exactly. That's why this cycle is so important, because I hope in the end we get a simplified procedure which will be less strenuous and less expensive. But again, all these costs do have to be borne somehow.
If the gentleman would yield just a second to clarify, ICANN has had difficulty raising the funds to support itself. They looked at a fee at one time that created a firestorm of controversy. They pulled back from the fee. In previous answers, you said that you still have half of the receipts that came in from the applications, which would indicate that, in fact, it was not a cost-based fee, but that you actually have double what it cost you to assess them, and that it could be a way for you to finance ICANN. Is that what, could you clarify that?
I understand the line of reasoning, Congressman Pickering. However, it turns out that we have additional expenses associated with processing the applications. We now have to go through the negotiating process to actually come to agreements with each one of the seven applicants. That costs money as well, and so we expect there will be continued expenses associated with finally executing on all of the seven proposals that are underway.
And I'm going to end my period of time. I appreciate all your attentive. I think we've learned a lot, and Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
Thank you. Mr. Pickering.
Let me try to cover as much ground as quickly as possible. On your recommendations to Mr. Markey, you talked about ICANN performing just a standard or technical role. But similar to the way budget in this place drives policy and policy drives budget, does not technical drive policy and policy drive technical in the internet world? And how do you solve that dilemma?
It is difficult to draw that line, admittedly, and I think we are seeing the struggle that ICANN itself is having in drawing that line. We may not be able to perfectly do it. There may be technical decisions that have policy implications, and that's why actually I think the real set of recommendations here is that we really got to be thinking about a three-legged stool here. One is limitation on the technical to the technical objective things as much as possible. The second is having an appropriate governance structure and policy to deal with to the extent that there are other kinds of issues that get dealt with, and that means having a good representative board and having good structures internally. And the other is doing it in this bottom-up consensus way. This is, as my statement says, the promise of ICANN to go back to this bottom-up nature of self-organizing that the internet has done best. And those are the three things that I think ICANN needs.
Is there a way to limit the mission of ICANN to strictly technical and standard setting better or more effectively than we currently have?
Our belief is that there is, and that there we've talked about it in our testimony, and I think it's an ongoing thing for ICANN. There are no real strong structural limitations like, to use a U.S. example, the Bill of Rights, which reserves powers for the people here in our constitutional system. Finding structural ways to do similar kinds of things for ICANN, I think, would be a major step forward.
Now, who, maybe more appropriately, would limit their mission and set up the structural safeguards and do the Internet Bill of Rights for Internet users? Who has the authority to do that? And who should do that? Should Congress? Should ICANN?
It is a tricky question. I think that on some level, much of this is best if it comes from within ICANN, and if ICANN can itself find ways to do that. There is a role here for the U.S. government, just as there is a role for other governments that are involved in ICANN and watching what ICANN does, but also because I think we should note that there is a special backstop kind of responsibility that the U.S. Commerce Department has in this area.
Dr. Cerf, would you be willing, as the chair of the board of ICANN, to limit your mission to technical and standard? Would you submit a Bill of Rights, so to speak, for our internet users and provide the structural safeguards. Would you do that voluntarily?
I am a strong proponent, Congressman, of limiting the role of ICANN. In fact, I speak regularly about its unnecessary expansion to a phrase that's a buzzword, internet governance, which I think is a very broad term that ICANN has no business trying to achieve. With respect to the Bill of Rights, it sounds good on the surface, and I would need to understand more about the substance of it before I would know what I was signing up for. But in principle, the notion that we protect the users of the internet from abuse and from technical failures and the like is really important, I think.
Mr. Chairman, just one quick follow-up question. So if we limit the role, if we establish safeguards, then the question is, who does policy? If ICANN doesn't do policy, who should do policy?
I wonder if Mr. Frumkin.
Well, I guess the question is, what sort of policy do you mean? In the sense, we all do policy when we turn on our computers and decide what we want to use the internet for. The internet is a set of communication standards. We don't do policies about the alphabet. We don't do policies much about pencils. And in a sense, the internet's that kind of a tool. So those policy questions are probably left best to homes and families and individuals.
Well, this is the dilemma for us, and it has been from the very beginning. The reason that we have ICANN was to avoid APA, the Administrative Procedures Act. As much as any reason, we didn't want the APA to apply to ICANN. Now the problem with due process and other rights is that you have a private body that is not subject to APA, that is making decisions that many feel like should have some due process or APA or some safeguard. So how do we ensure that it continues to be private, non-governmental, but have the safeguards? What is the appropriate balance? And this is, and for example, policy, when ICANN wanted to set a fee, the question was, do they have, in essence, a taxing authority, an authority to tax people? Clearly, they do not. But now they're running into a problem of questions of the $50,000 fee. Is that the way to finance themselves? How will ICANN sustain itself financially? Those are all policy questions. Who will make those decisions? That's the dilemma that we all have.
I think you've really put you've hit the nail on the head here, and this is difficult. It's in some ways an experiment. To the extent that ICANN is. One answer in some ways also is to see if there are ways to make ICANN a healthier organization, that to the extent that it's appropriate, to the extent that ICANN is getting into these other areas, that the affected user community feels like this is a legitimate organization. And that's something that happens over time, and we all need to keep working on. I don't think it's happened yet. It's a great deal of internal debate within ICANN, for example, about how its board is selected, especially a section of the board that's selected at large. And I think the outcome of those kinds of debates is going to have a lot to do with whether we can have faith in an ICANN-like body to make these decisions to the extent that they are not simply objective technical standard decisions. So it's tough. And again, this bottom-up consensus-oriented idea is very important in thinking about whether the user community that's affected by this can trust the organization.
Mr. Chairman, I know that my time is up, but I think that we are beginning to focus on the issues, and maybe this is just the beginning with this hearing to see if we can come up with the reforms and the steps that we need to take to make sure that the promise and the potential of the internet, the ICANN, the domain names, does have the credibility and the confidence of the American people, and what we can do as a committee to be a catalyst to answer these questions. I look forward to working with all of you, Dr. Cerf and all others, to try to get the right reforms as quickly as possible, and hopefully done in a voluntary, private, non-governmental way.
Thank you. Mr. Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to welcome all of our panelists, and thank you especially for your excellent testimony. We've covered a lot of ground in the last 14 months, and I think you've improved our knowledge base a great deal here this morning. The debate that has gone on this morning has included questions of the role that ICANN can or should play in the development of policy. One of the policy issues that I'd like to use as the basis for furthering that discussion in just a few minutes that we've discussed here in this committee and also throughout the House and the Senate is what to do about pornography on the internet. One of several ideas that has been discussed is the creation of a top-level domain that would essentially zone the internet voluntarily. We rejected early on the idea of a government mandate for this to occur, but we have been very interested in whether the private sector might migrate in that direction, because if it did, it might then be possible for Congress to offer incentives, not penalties, which would run afoul of First Amendment guarantees, but incentives for people to list on that adults-only top-level domain. Obviously, the most primitive screening software, indeed no screening software at all, virtually would be needed to the extent that this were successful in the marketplace, for people then to discriminate among content that they were seeking, and indeed, if you are an aficionado of pornography, probably simplify your life. But for everyone else who wishes to avoid it, it would also simplify theirs. So I'd begin by putting that question to you, Dr. Cerf, and I perhaps ought to know the answer to this question, but I haven't found it in what's gone by thus far, whether any of the 44 applications that you reviewed was for such a top-level domain.
Indeed, one of the applications did propose a .XXX. Discussions that ensued among the board on this point turned in large measure on our uncertainty of how to enforce movement or registration of those pornographic sites to that top-level domain. As you know, we all know, you can reach literally every domain in the internet by using the domain name system. So everywhere in the world, not just in the United States, one would need to create the incentives that you mentioned in order to persuade these purveyors to move over into this single global top-level domain.
We did. Let's pause just there for a moment, because there's an assumption there that I think is not empirically in evidence, and that is that there wouldn't be an advantage to being registered in a place where people might expect to find you. And .com is crowded with all sorts of things. You've got to sort through them. One might expect rather rapidly to find what one was looking for on a domain.
We were not that sure that
that were like the other top-level domains you selected, descriptive of its purpose.
I don't think that the board was able to conclude that we could guarantee that everyone would move over, even though, as you say, there might be some incentive. And so in the absence of knowing for sure that it could be guaranteed, we also ran into the question whether someone would then complain or in fact take legal action if, in fact, not everyone did move over. So enforcement was a principal concern there.
And I take it your process for evaluating this was discussion at the board level?
It was discussed in public during the course of the GTLD evaluations. And so it is documented on the website, in fact.
And the participants in that discussion were?
The members of the board.
The board, right.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that tees up, and I know you're jumping to get in here, too. That tees up a question that I would then put to Mr. Davidson and Professor Frumkin about whether you think, using this as an example of the kinds of policy decisions that ICANN is being called upon to make, whether you think this process is working and is workable for resolving such questions.
I'd like to say two things. One is the Congressman has been one of the thoughtful commentators on this question of how we deal with the very compelling issue of protecting kids on the internet. And I would just say, on the specific question of .xxx and .kids being presented to ICANN right now, I really have to rise to ICANN's defense on some level and say I think they did exactly the right thing by not going there, as it were. There are a lot of reasons to believe that these are difficult and troubling concepts. The congressional Commission on Child Online Protection, in fact, which recently reported to Congress, came out of the COPPA statute, raised a lot of questions about the, particularly .xxx, because, for example, it could be viewed as an attractive nuisance, where you know, people could go to find a collection of materials that people that were troubling, or there is definitely an issue with the fact that these are binary labels. You're either in or you're out, and they don't have any of the granularity that many of the other much more sophisticated tools out there for parents do, and they don't scale well globally. You know, I mean, what we think ought to be in .kids here in the United States might not be what they think ought to be in .kids in Europe or in Asia or in Germany. And so it's not clear that these are actually as useful solutions as many of us might hope. And then the second thing is that, given that they are highly controversial because of their impact on speech, and I think in that respect, ICANN did the right thing here by saying this is an area where there are major policy impacts. We should stay out of it. If ICANN were to create .dems but not .gop, right, we would say, gosh, there's a problem there, right? And I think that ICANN should stay out of making decisions in areas where there are very, very clear policy concerns that have been raised.
And let me add that, as you know, but perhaps the other panelists or other members don't know, the Center has been very active on this, and I've been much reliant on your research and advice and guidance, and it's one of the reasons I haven't introduced legislation on this topic. My question, however, is slightly different. Maybe I should give Professor Frumkin a chance to answer it. It is not so much whether at the moment you come down yay or nay on the question of whether you would have approved a particular application, but rather whether this, as emblematic of the kinds of tough policy questions that are getting put to ICANN, is something that is tractable within the current structure, and whether there are structural changes that need to be made to address this, whether ICANN is the right body to address such questions, and so on. And I think you did answer that partially, but that's the nub of my question. Professor Frumkin?
I'll do my best to meet it head-on, Congressman. I think that if for ICANN to get involved in any issue that smacks of content control will bring the whole thing justifiably crashing down, and they were very wise to run away from it. Now, that doesn't answer the implicit question, which is, if not ICANN, then what? And let me just take a tiny crack at that, if I may, and everyone will hate me for this. There is the .us domain, and if we're trying to make rules that meet the needs of people in this country, that's one place where we could create something with granularity for different age groups and so on. People wouldn't be required to use it, but it would be a resource that would be available. And that would be one way to do something that didn't run into the transnational problems and the giving ICANN, which is supposed to be a technical standards body, not a speech regulation body, problem, and so on. And that might be an avenue to approach. Again, linking it to .us brings right to the fore the problem of First Amendment values. Then that's where it belongs.
I don't know if I have, it seems the chairman's forbearing, and I'll take advantage. I just put it back back to Dr. Cerf to wrap up for us. The two commentators have just opined that you made the right choice, and that one of the reasons that you made the right choice is that ICANN normatively ought to stay away from issues that carry this kind of policy controversy. Can you tell us your views on that general topic?
Well, I certainly hope that ICANN doesn't have to ever get into things like content control. We edge in that direction a little bit when we have the specialized domains that have restricted membership. But in the cases that we approved, it appeared to us that the restrictions were pretty objective. Are you a museum or are you not a museum? Are you a co-op or not a co-op, and so on. In the case of .pro, do you have a professional affiliation or degree or not? The notion of content control is such a slippery slope. We've seen some international debates on this subject. As perhaps you're aware of the court case in France against Yahoo. All of these matters are extremely complicated, and as was pointed out a little bit earlier, the top-level domain system is a very crude mechanism for describing content. It's an extraordinarily unsatisfying way of trying to imply what will be found in a particular top-level domain. And as a result, it feels like that's not the place where ICANN should be trying to make decisions. We do have a problem if multiple parties propose the same top-level domains. We do have a policy question: how do we choose among them, even within the route that we are responsible for? That's hard, and it's the sort of thing that still doesn't, I'm not satisfied that we understand how to deal with that, especially if qualified parties come with conflicting proposals. That's a very difficult thing.
Well, I thank you, and I think what we've touched on here is something that is not only difficult for ICANN to handle, but also something that may be beyond the capacity of any top-level domain system to handle. And it's been suggested, I might add just for local color, that a better way to do this in a purely voluntary fashion would be for people to organize around the principle of including somewhere in an internet address, for example, .adu is an abbreviation for adult or age-appropriate material, and that way people could have any address they want, any domain they wanted, and still there'd be some unifying theme that robots could notice. But that's a carol for another Christmas.
That's an interesting idea, in fact.
All right. Well, I thank the panel again, and my time surely has expired. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. This concludes the hearing. I would note for the record that particularly for those members that were not able to come, and I know that there are some other hearings taking place at the same time, that we may see some written questions come your way. You can respond to them on email if you'd like. But we look forward, if that happens, to a timely response. And I would just, I guess, offer this one conclusion to the hearing. Based on the questions of all members here and the statements, opening statements as well, we don't want a boring or exciting process. We want, our goal here is to make sure that it is fair and open in every way. Particularly for those that are qualified parties with a qualified application, so that they may in fact succeed, and so that all of us users and businesses succeed as well. And I've viewed this hearing as a constructive one. I hope all of you have taken that to heart. I think that there is room for improvement as this process continues. And we will continue to oversee this process in the days ahead, not only through my chairmanship of this subcommittee, but I know Mr. Greenwood would like to do the same as part of the oversight subcommittee as well. We look forward to that. We thank you for your time and look forward to seeing you again. Thank you very much.